Chosen, written by David Miner, narrated by me, Betty. Prologue. In the shadowed heart of Bervern, Germany, a forgotten place, steeped in history and whispered myths, is home to Marcus, a man whose life had always been touched by the supernatural. The walls of Marcus's home had begun to breathe. At first, he thought it was the wind rattling loose windows, until he watched the plaster ripple like skin, exhaling cold drafts that carried whispers in a language no living mouth had spoken in centuries. The air inside the house had turned heavy, saturated with a scent he could only describe as wet stone and bone marrow, like something old had seeped up through the floorboards and curled itself around his spine. He hadn't left the house in 3 days. The clocks had all stopped, not at the same time, but they had stopped. Every mirror reflected rooms that didn't exist. And last night, something scratched from inside the oven door over and over until he taped it shut and locked the kitchen. It wasn't hunger that kept him awake now. It was the feeling that the house was remembering him in ways a house shouldn't. Tonight, the scratching had returned. But it wasn't coming from the kitchen. It was coming from beneath the floor. And he already knew who would be waiting for him at the bottom of the stairs. Chapter 1. Marcus hadn't eaten, hadn't slept, hadn't spoken a word aloud in nearly 48 hours. He sat in the dark, knees to chest, cradling the fireplace poker like a crucifix, staring at the oven. The sounds had returned, not the old groans of warped pipes or shifting timbers. These were purposeful, calculated. Something inside the oven door scratched in long, wet strokes, pausing just long enough to listen. It was the kind of scratching that mimicked nails on the inside of a coffin, slowly learning the thickness of the wood. Then came the whisper. It didn't come from the oven. It came from underneath it. A low hum vibrated through the tile. Not a voice, but something older than language, brushing up against Marcus's skull like black silk. It felt like something was crawling up from beneath the house, not through the floor, but through the memories in his bones and the smell, that unholy stench, rotting moss, burned teeth, old pennies, boiled in sweat. He covered his nose with a dish towel and turned off every light, all but the one flickering bulb above the hallway mirror. It swayed gently, though there was no breeze. That's when he saw it. The reflection moved before he did. A shadow bloomed in the mirror, tall and narrow, like a woman carved from candle wax. Her eyes, glowing with that sick, predatory green, she smiled, lips red as butchered fruit, and raised her clawed hand. The scratching in the oven stopped. Marcus turned to run, but the front door was already open, and on the doorstep lay a fox, its neck twisted violently, jaw locked mid-scream, above it, slathered in sticky, dark blood. A single word was scrawled across the wood in jagged script. Chosen. His breath hitched. It wasn't just blood. It was still warm. The air around him seemed to close in, thicker than before, vibrating with a pitch just beneath hearing, like the frequency of a thing sharpening its teeth inside the walls. He backed away from the door, trembling, eyes locked on the blood. But something behind him groaned. Not human, not animal, something ancient. He turned back to the kitchen and found the oven door wide open. Inside was a smear of wet footprints, shaped like talons. The light bulb above him burst. The room went black. He collapsed to the floor, clutching the fireplace poker to his chest, whispering the only name that still brought a bitter sense of control to his world. Betty. That's when the wind began to blow. And the wind does not usually blow like this in this town. When the wind blows wrong, it's not the weather you need to fear. It's the doors that open. It's what remembers you. It's who is waiting on the other side. The image of Betty appeared on the front porch of Marcus's house. Betty's appearance was in the form of a beautiful, fair-skinned woman with long, flowing red hair. Marcus knew that she could effortlessly shift into the form of many other images that could appear much darker. She was clothed in a short, thin, black cloak and nothing else. She gleamed at Marcus through the doorway, pointing to the mysterious word written on the door. Marcus looked away from making eye contact with Betty. He felt uncomfortable by the weight of her soul-piercing stare. When Marcus looked at the doorway again, Betty was gone. "Follow me," her distant voice proclaimed from the path leading away from his house. The sound of her voice seemed to ride on the wind. Marcus followed the sound of her voice. It was not a command, nor a beckoning, but a gravitational pull. Betty moved ahead, wordless now, her silhouette rippling between the trees like smoke against moonlight. She didn't speak. She didn't have to. He already knew where she was taking him. Through the skeletal woods behind Bearvern, the branches reached like withered hands, scratching at his coat, grasping for his skin. The sky above churned with sickly clouds, pulsing crimson between breaks in the canopy. And then, the cemetery. The oldest stone stood crooked, sunk into the earth like a broken tooth. Marcus could feel the cold radiating from it. Not weather, but the breath of something beneath. Betty placed one hand upon the stone, and the gate opened. It did not creak or grind. It sighed, as if exhaling centuries of silence. No light spilled out. Only a darkness so complete, it swallowed the moon. A spiral staircase coiled downward, cut into stone so ancient it appeared to rot. But it wasn't decay. It was age, wearing a mask of flesh. Marcus stepped forward. The gate could not be opened by mortal hands. Only those born of the raven's throne, only the Sitas, could part the veil. He descended without hesitation. Each step down seemed to stretch time, pulling him deeper into a place that remembered him more vividly than he remembered himself. And as the stone swallowed the last trace of sky, he whispered beneath his breath, "The Raven's Throne." A name given to a kingdom beneath the roots of the world, where the mysteries unknown to the living are experienced and revealed. Chapter 2. The streets of the Raven's Throne pulsed with a low red light, not from any sun, but from beneath the stone itself. Marcus moved beside Betty in silence. The path twisted and turned, but she navigated it with ease. She had walked it many times. He had not. Strange creatures watched from the cracks in the buildings. Not rats. Not dogs. Not anything with a name, Marcus knew. They didn't blink. They didn't move. They just observed. The air tasted like ash and rusted iron. "You're not afraid," Betty said, as they passed an archway where robed figures whispered to bone idols. Marcus didn't respond. He wasn't sure if she was right. Betty smiled. "That's good. Fear isn't useful here." They came to a building carved entirely from obsidian. It breathed, not literally, but with a rhythm that mimicked something living. The front door was sealed shut with a lock that looked biological, as if made from twisted tendons and bone. Betty pressed her fingers to it. The lock hissed open like a mouth unclenching. Inside, the room smelled of incense and wet stone. Runes lined the floor. A wide slab of dark granite stood in the center. A ceremonial table. A place of remembering. Or forgetting. Marcus approached it slowly, his heart knocking harder with each step. Betty stood behind him. "Lie down," she said, not unkindly. "What is this?" "A gate of another kind." "And what's on the other side?" Betty leaned close to his ear. Her breath was cool. "Me," Marcus climbed onto the stone. The moment his body touched it, the runes around the room lit with a dull red glow. Betty began to hum. The melody was old. Marcus didn't recognize the tune, but his blood did. His skin flushed hot. His eyes felt pulled downward. The world shifted. Everything inverted. And then there was only silence. Betty's voice echoed through the void. "Welcome home, Marcus." Chapter 3. Marcus opened his eyes. He wasn't in the obsidian room anymore. He was somewhere deeper, colder. The walls pulsed with a faint green glow, like veins beneath dead skin. The floor below him was carved stone, covered in sigils that shifted when he looked away. Betty stood in the center of the room. Her robes were gone. She wore something older, a thin black garment woven from smoke and thread. It clung to her like memory. "You've crossed the veil," she said. "This place is called the Sinking Hollow." Marcus tried to speak. His voice didn't work. Betty stepped forward. "It's hard, I know. The body resists what the spirit accepts." She reached up and placed two fingers over his heart. A pulse of warmth flooded his chest. He inhaled sharply. The breath tasted wrong, like dust and roses. "There," she said. "Now you can see." And he did. Around them, the room transformed. Walls became eyes. The ceiling vanished. Above them was nothing but black sky in shifting constellations made of bone-white light. "This is where you begin to remember," Betty whispered. She touched the air, and a symbol appeared, a perfect circle of thorns, dripping ink and blood. Marcus reached toward it, and when his fingers met the edge, pain spiked through his palm like a blade. He didn't pull away. "Good," Betty said, smiling. "You are not afraid of pain. You were made for this." "Made for what?" he asked. Her voice changed then. It deepened, echoed, multiplied. "To open the second gate." A sound like thunder tore through the hollow. The light above collapsed into shadow. The floor broke open beneath them. Marcus fell, not down, but inward. And Betty's laughter followed him like a curse wrapped in silk. Chapter 4. Marcus awoke in the dark. The stone beneath him was warm, breathing. His body ached like he'd been wrung out and poured into something new. Above him, shapes moved through the void. Massive things, winged and slow, silent as thought, he sat up. The hollow was gone. He was in a corridor carved of obsidian and bone, the walls alive with twitching roots and whispering glyphs. At the end of the hall, a single red light pulsed like a heartbeat. Betty stood in front of it. She was waiting. "You passed through the first of three," she said. "Gates?" Marcus asked. His voice echoed strangely, like it didn't belong to him. "Truths," she corrected. "But yes, gates." Marcus stood, his legs held, barely. "What happens now?" Betty tilted her head. Her hair fell over one shoulder like smoke. "Now you decide how much you want to forget." He stepped closer. "I don't want to forget anything." "You say that now." Betty moved toward the wall. She touched one of the glyphs. It pulsed green. The air behind them split open like a curtain drawn too fast. On the other side, a field of iron crosses. Dozens. Hundreds. Each one twisted. Some wept. Some bled. Some screamed when the wind passed. "What is this place?" Marcus asked. "A memory," she said. "One you don't remember yet." They walked between the crosses. Betty's feet never made a sound. "Who buried them?" he asked. "You did." "Why?" Betty didn't answer. At the far end of the field stood a mirror, tall, ancient, its frame wrapped in vines and thorns. The glass shimmered with fog. Marcus looked into it. He saw himself, but not the man he was now. The reflection showed something older, hungrier, something that remembered what Marcus had buried. And it smiled. Chapter 5. Marcus stepped back from the mirror. The smile it had shown him still lingered in his mind like a sickness. Betty stood beside him now, silent, watching. "That reflection," he said. "It wasn't me." "It was," she replied. "It still is? Just not the you you know." Marcus turned to face her. "How do I know I can trust you?" Betty smiled faintly. "You don't, but you already did. That's why you're here." She waved a hand, and the mirror vanished into mist. The field of crosses dissolved. They stood in a circular chamber made of dark crystal and bone. In the center was a pool, black and motionless, but alive with a pulse beneath its surface. Betty knelt beside it. "This is the memory well," she said. "It holds every truth you gave away." Marcus stared into it. Shadows flickered beneath the surface. Scenes, faces, sounds he couldn't quite place. "What am I supposed to do?" he asked. "Drink." "Will it kill me?" "No," she said. "But it might break you. Just a little." Marcus dropped to his knees. He dipped his hands into the well. The liquid was thick, cold, like ink and blood. He brought it to his lips. He drank and screamed. Not from pain, from recognition. He saw flashes, rooms he'd never entered, but somehow remembered. A child's voice. A blood-soaked altar. Betty's face. Younger. Crueler. And a word. Whispered again and again. Chosen. When he looked up, the well was gone. Betty was beside him. She helped him to his feet. "You're remembering," she said. "What if I don't want to remember the rest?" "You will." She opened the next door. Beyond it, darkness. And something breathing in the black. Chapter 6. The air was thicker now. Marcus stepped into the dark, and the door behind him vanished without a sound. The space ahead felt infinite, yet claustrophobic. Every footstep echoed like a hammer against bone. Betty walked beside him, though he hadn't seen her move. She was just suddenly there, as if she had always been. "This is the vein," she said softly. "It runs through everything beneath Bervern, through memory, through myth, through marrow." "What's at the end of it?" Marcus asked. "A choice." They walked in silence. The walls of the vein pulsed like living flesh. Faint symbols shimmered beneath the skin of the corridor, too fast to read, too ancient to understand. "I remember some of this," Marcus said. "Not all, but some." "That's enough," Betty replied. "For now." They came to a large chamber. In the center stood a single chair, carved from the roots of something long dead. It wasn't wood. It wasn't stone. It looked like the spine of a forgotten god. "Sit," Betty said. Marcus did. As soon as his body touched the chair, the room responded. The symbols ignited. The floor shifted. He saw flashes. Not like before. This time they were clear. Himself, buried alive. Betty, kneeling in a pool of blood. A man screaming in a language Marcus didn't know, but somehow understood. A sigil burned into his chest. "This isn't real," he whispered. "It is," Betty said. "It always was. You just couldn't see it until now." The symbols pulsed faster. The chair hummed beneath him. "It's almost time," Betty whispered. "For what?" Her eyes gleamed with something ancient and unkind. "To remember what you are." Chapter 7. The memory came like a flood. Not a gentle return, but a crashing, shattering wave that tore through Marcus's mind with the weight of centuries. He screamed, but not from pain, from revelation. He remembered. He remembered the stone altar and the blood that slicked it. The chants that split the night like knives. The veiled congregation kneeling before him. Faces hidden, hearts offered. He was their leader. Their high voice. The firstborn of the Veil of Shadows. He saw his own hands lifting the obsidian dagger. He remembered the trembling of the acolyte below him. A willing sacrifice. One of many. He remembered the words, the ones forbidden to speak, and he remembered what came when he spoke them. The night the gate opened, a shape, not born of flesh, emerged. A thing of bone and black wind, eyes like dying stars. It looked at him, and with a single soundless cry, it cracked his mind in two. He had collapsed on the altar, bleeding from eyes, ears, mouth. His followers fled, screaming that the voice had died, that the gate had punished them for arrogance. They left him, all of them, except her. Betty had come, not as she was now, but older, wilder, a creature cloaked in both kindness and cruelty. She had taken what was left of him and hidden him in the shell of a man. And for years, he had walked the world without memory, until now. "Why?" he asked her, his voice hoarse, trembling. Betty stood across from him in the Hall of Remnants, surrounded by the glowing symbols of the Raven's throne. She did not blink. She did not lie. "Because you were not ready," she said. "Am I now?" She stepped forward, slowly, and took his face in her hands. "You are more than ready, Marcus. You are chosen." The word echoed, not in the chamber, but in him. It pulsed through his bones like music, like a curse. He stepped back, his body changing, not physically, but spiritually. The Raven's throne no longer rejected him. It bowed. The gate behind him opened. Not the supernatural one, but the true one. The passage out. The path that led up. Betty stood beside him now. "Will you return?" she asked. "Yes," he said. "But I will come back." "I know," she whispered. And so he walked the spiral staircase once more, each step lighting with green fire as he rose. When he emerged from the cemetery, the sky was gray with dawn. The town of Bervern was silent. He walked home. The air felt different now, as if it too remembered. When he reached his door, he paused. The word that had haunted him, chosen, was gone. Not scratched away, not covered, gone, as if it had never been written. Marcus stepped inside his house, closed the door, and did not speak. But in the darkness, something moved, and far below, in the Raven's throne, Betty smiled. Conclusion. This concludes the audiobook. Chosen. Narrated by me, Betty. But this isn't the end, darling. No, it's only the beginning. Marcus has returned, but the Raven's throne is not done with him. The gate, once opened, has begun to rot the veil between worlds. Whispers crawl through the cracks. Blood thickens in the soil, and something older than gods, has noticed that Marcus remembers. The veil of shadows was just a rehearsal. The real ceremony is still to come. Next, you'll follow us deeper, to where the dead still speak, to where even Betty doesn't go alone. And when we call upon the offering, you will hear your name in the dark. Stay close, stay obedient. Because the next time the wind blows wrong, you won't be able to shut the door. We'll see you soon.